Coming to Syracuse, he's a bishop superior of the United States. He comes from the country of France, the country across the Atlantic.
The warm country, right?
Huh?
The warm country?
Well, thanks for coming tonight. Father's going to give us a little update on the society situation with Rome, and maybe we'll take just a few questions at the end. It's already 9 o'clock here in the evening. So I think, Father, to keep him from going too long, we'll pass 11 o'clock at night. If it goes past 11, Father, we're starting by pizza for all of us.
All right.
All right. Do you need the microphone or a whatever?
There's a couple of chairs up here.
All right. Well, thank you for coming. Thank you for this beautiful Mass of this evening for the Immaculate Conception. It was very nice to be able to celebrate this Mass with beautiful choirs, altar boys, and so on. So it's in honor of Our Lady. It's a great pleasure. And so tonight I will say a few words on the situation with Rome. I will try to be short, and so that you can possibly ask a few questions, and also because there is not a lot new. There is always a lot to say, especially when you give the microphone to a priest. There is nothing, I mean, not a lot new. What is the situation with Rome? I think with the past few years, a few things happened, events happened in the church. Remember the motu proprio in 2007, the lifting of the excommunication, or more exactly the so-called excommunication in 2009, and then 2 years of doctrinal discussions between the Commission of the Society and the Commission of the Congregation of the Defense of the Faith. So 2 years of talks. September 14, just a few months ago, the meeting in Rome between Bishop Tollet and his two assistants and Cardinal Levada, and then was given this doctrinal preamble whose signature could allow the creation of a canonical status, talking about a personal prelature like the Opus Dei. November 28, just a few days ago, Bishop Tollet answered and published an interview on Dici, explaining also the situation and announcing what we were waiting for, but soon an answer will be given to Rome about this preamble. That's the situation in which we are, so we have to wait for the answer of Bishop Tollet. So I wish you a good night, and I'll see you next time. No, I think we can first remember the principles that lead us in this crisis. It's always important in time of possible changes in the circumstances around us, we must always come back to the principles that lead us. So, first, our attachment to the Catholic Church. We are Roman Catholic. We are attached to Rome, to the sovereign pontiff, to the Pope, and we have always expressed that attachment and responded to Rome when Rome wanted to discuss. So that's the first principle. We know it, but it's important to remember that because it must lead us in these circumstances today. The second principle that we must always keep in mind is that the problem in the church today, the crisis in the church for at least 40 years, is a crisis of doctrine, of faith, and all the rest are consequences. The new Mass is a consequence of a doctrinal problem. And our attachment to the Tridentine Mass is because of a question of doctrine, of faith. And it's not just because we like certain things, we like the beautiful music, yes we do in fact, but it's not the main reason of our attachment to the Tridentine Mass and our refusal of the new Mass. It's based on doctrine. So the crisis is a crisis of doctrine, and we must always keep that in mind whenever things are a bit possibly changing, or the circumstances anyway. So that's, I think, very important to remember. Recall the declaration of Archbishop Lefebvre in 1974, we adhere to eternal Rome and refuse the neo-modernist Rome. Yes, we stick to that declaration. We hold fast with all our heart and with all our soul to Catholic Rome, guardian of the Catholic faith, and the traditions necessary to preserve this faith, to eternal Rome, mistress of wisdom and truth. We refuse, on the other hand, and have always refused, to follow the Rome of neo-modernist and neo-Protestant tendencies, which were clearly evident in the Second Vatican Council and after the Council in all the reforms which issued from it. So, clear statement, 1974, we are quite a few decades after that, but we are still in the same situation. We adhere to eternal Rome, and we want to remain, and we do remain Roman Catholics, but we refuse to follow the Rome of neo-modernist and neo-Protestant tendencies. These principles remain absolutely the guiding line in this time of crisis. So on one hand, we have always refused the Sede Vacantis position, refusing that there is a Pope. We have always refused that as imprudent, as not even founded in true and sounded theology, and having a schismatic spirit behind. We have always refused that schismatic Sede Vacantis ideas or positions. But at the same time, we have always refused to follow these neo-modernist, neo-Protestant tendencies in the actual Rome and even in the actual Pope. The defense of the faith is really the motive of our fight today. I won't extend that too much. I think it's important to read and to study these questions as much as we can, so that we keep clear principles to lead us. What is the situation with Rome in more details? I think I would go first to some kind of analysis or something like this what has changed and what has not changed in Rome. It is true that in the past 5 years at least, certain things have changed in Rome and in the church. The modus proprio, the lifting of the excommunication had brought certain things, new things in the church, and even a certain new spirit. But there are other things that have not changed at all. And I think the first thing that has not changed in Rome is the attachment of the Roman authorities to the Second Vatican Council. The Pope has expressed in many occasions since he has been elected his conviction of the, I would say, the goodness of the spirit and of the text themselves of Vatican II. He's always trying to lead back to a new interpretation, or more exactly an interpretation which would be more faithful to the spirit of the council, but it's always referring self and referring the teaching of the church to the Second Vatican Council. He's also trying to make a link between the teaching of today of the church, or the teaching of Vatican II, with the teaching of the past. That's what he calls the hermeneutic of continuity. So that interpretation of continuity, we must understand Vatican II in continuity with the teaching of the church. Therefore, you will not find what we had in many places. You will not find denial of dogmas of the church defined in the past. You will not find in the Pope and in this new spirit that he is bringing in the church a denial of the Immaculate Conception or of the real presence of our Lord Jesus Christ, even not the denial of the transubstantiation. Things that we have heard in the past, even within the church, now you will not hear that, at least coming from the Pope nor from the from Rome. So there is that continuity with the past that the Pope wants to build. However, all the new teaching of Vatican II on ecumenism, religious liberty, collegiality, and others, but these are the main ones, are the main core of the teaching of the Pope. It's what he believes in. He believes that this is a continuity of the teaching of the past. The acceptation of Vatican II in its right, if we can find a right interpretation of Vatican II, is not optional in the church today, with that hermeneutic of continuity. So that, I think, has not changed at all. Nothing has changed on that. It's a bit more, it's not as aggressive as before, but it has not changed. What has changed on that regard is that there is a certain leeway in criticizing Vatican II. There is a legitimate discussion about certain points of Vatican II. It was in the press release given by the Vatican on the 14th of September, speaking about that meeting between Cardinal Levara and Bishop Follet. So, it is in the preamble that there is a legitimate discussions of Vatican II. That's new, because a few years ago it was absolutely out of the question to discuss anything from Vatican II. What we don't know today is what is the extent of that leeway. How much can we question Vatican II? How much can we refuse Vatican II? How far can we go in criticizing Vatican II and even the actions that are led by the principles of Vatican II? How far can we speak about the actions of the Pope when he goes to Assisi, or when he does what he has done in many of his visits to different countries, what we have seen in Germany just a few months ago? What is the leeway that we have? We don't know. What is new is that there is a certain acceptation of discussion, but how far? What is new regarding the Council is that there are also other voices outside of the society that are now criticizing Vatican II. In Rome, especially in Italy, but in also different places, there are new voices that now are speaking of writing against Vatican II. You may have heard of Monsignor Gherardini, who wrote several books criticizing Vatican II, and the more he writes, the closer his positions is from the position of the society on ecumenism and on every aspect that we have criticized Vatican II. Bishop Athanasius Schneider, who asked for a syllabus condemning the errors in interpreting the Council. So he wants a list of proposition condemning all the wrong interpretations of Vatican II. It would be interesting to see. I think it's important, and it's new in the Church. Not long ago you had also a petition to the Pope by Britain and signed by Italian Catholic intellectuals, quite a long list, that signed a petition asking the Pope to review the Second Vatican Council. So other voices, absolutely independent from the society, from other sources, are now speaking up and criticizing Vatican II. This is new, and this is good. This is a good direction. So we see few changes that are interesting. In Rome itself, there are a few changes. Changes in the liturgy. We are in the battle for the translation, the new translation, or the implementation of the new translation of the Novus Ordo liturgy. Interesting to see how the Pope is enforcing a more correct translation, in particular the Pro Multis, but there is a big resistance in many countries for this translation. In the interview that Bishop Follet gave a few days ago, he speaks of some changes that are being worked on in the new code of canon law. So there are some changes which are being made in the canon law of 1983, Pope John Paul II, which now are trying to correct certain things. Interesting to see that anyway. So there are things that are changing in the Church, but the attachment to Vatican II remains. And that's, I would say, the big battle, because there is really nothing that can be done without really putting that wall down. I mean, I think another aspect of the situation we are now, since the discussions with Rome over the past 2 years, is that you see more and more Rome is obliged to take into account our positions in many ways. It's interesting to see, to read the Observatore Romano, which is the official document in papers of the Vatican, where you find all the official documents and so on, translated in various languages. It's interesting to see how they, in quite a few articles now, they respond to our argumentation, what we say. I mean, they cannot avoid the Society of St. Pius X in its positions and trying to respond to it. We have an example just a few days ago. So Bishop Follet gave an interview on November 28th, I think it was published on November 28th, and there he explains how Rome cannot impose new articles of the faith. So there is a creed we believe in that comes from the apostles, and well, you cannot add some new articles to the creed. I believe in holy ecumenism. I believe in sacred religious liberty. I believe in democratic divine collegiality. It's these dogmas or these articles do not belong to the creed, and you cannot add. It's the revelation is closed with the death of the last apostle, Saint John. So there is no new dogma that can be taught in the Church. Clarity, clarification, expression, making so there is an evolution of the dogma, but there is no new dogmas. Bishop Follet, in his interview, expressed that in a simple way, but pretty clear. The Apostle Creed is fixed forever. There will be some clarification, but they cannot be novelties. So, in fact, our position within this crisis is stronger than that. It's not just an expression of our position here, saying they cannot add new dogmas. Our position is even these dogmas are against the creed. They go against the creed. When you say the ecumenism, it's against the act of faith in one God, and I believe in God the Father Almighty, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. This ecumenism destroys, at least indirectly, this dogma of the faith. So our position is stronger than that, but as an argument anyway, we shall probably use it and say they cannot add new things, at least. Well, in the Observatore Romano of, I don't know exactly, but a few days after, there is an article on the adhesion to Vatican II. What is it to, everyone, every Catholic must receive Vatican II? And it's directly an answer to the position of Bishop Follet expressed in his interview. They cannot avoid to answer our positions even in their in this official document. I don't know if it's just by chance. I don't really believe so, because it's not the only time that it happens. Many times they just prepare their answer and publish them when they need to act against our positions. In this article, they recognize, they admit that the Second Vatican Council did not define any dogma. Huh. Thank you. Thank you. That's a step. Well, there is no new dogma, there is no any. However, it does not follow that such a teaching is therefore to be considered fallible. So there were no new dogma, but nevertheless, you cannot say that the teaching of Vatican II was, because of that reason, fallible. And there is some ground to that. That's what we call the ordinary teaching of the Church and so on. But it's very interesting, and I won't read the whole article, because otherwise I have to pay pizza to everyone, so I don't intend to. it's very interesting to see that they try to answer anyway. They try to answer our objections, which I think is a new step. As a conclusion, and then you can ask me questions on more precise things. Bishop Follet in the interview said that in a little while, we will draw up a response to this document. So soon, we should, Rome will receive a response to the doctrinal preamble. On this response, and that I'm just quoting Bishop Follet, there will be emphasized on the doctrinal positions of the Society of St. Pius X, because that's what we have always done, and that we will continue to do. The discussions were the occasion to present the traditional position with complete loyalty, and I think, yes, it was very open. So there is this reaffirmation of our doctrinal positions. Bishop Follet says here, so I think I can repeat it now, yes, the preamble cannot receive our endorsement. We cannot accept the preamble, the doctrinal preamble, as at least as it is. It's not clear. And yes, it allows this legitimate discussion of Vatican II, but we have no idea of what extent, and at least this doctrinal preamble needs some clarification, if not more. Now it's kind of public, we will not accept this preamble, and we'll see how Rome reacts to that. It's also understood that these texts can change, but it needs quite a bit of change. What is the solution to the crisis? That's a question which is asked to Bishop Follet in his interview, and I will simply read what he said. You can read it on our website, but I think it's a beautiful answer here, which we must take with heart and put in practice. And short of a miracle, there can be no instantaneous solution. Wanting God to give the victory without asking armed men to engage in battle, to quote St. John of Arc, is a form of desertion. Wanting an end to the crisis without feeling concerned or involved is not really to love the Church. Providence does not dispense us from the duty of our state in life, wherever it has placed us, or from assuming our responsibilities and responding to the graces that He grants us. And he goes on with an explanation of where we are at, but here is the real answer to the question. Wanting God to give the victory without fighting, not going to happen, and we will have to fight until the end. Wanting an end to the crisis without feeling concerned or involved, every one of us, it's not the question of Bishop Foley in Rome, it's not the question of the priest, it's a question of everyone must be involved in this restoration of the Church. Wherever we are placed with the state in life that we have to work for the restoration of the Church. How that will come, that's what we don't know. How long, how exactly, we don't know. But what we know is that there is a fight that will continue until the end of this crisis, and it will not just happen like this by a miracle, and we will have to fight. In other words, recognition of the society or not, what does it change in the reality of our fight? Nothing much. We are fighting for the restoration of tradition, and it's in fact doesn't matter that much. It's not just a change like this that will really change the situation of the Church, which is a disaster. That's where Bishop Foley goes in his answer. He gives a description, so you can go back to it, of the situation of the Church, which is a real disaster. So we'll have to continue this fight, everyone where we are at, with that with courage and not being really tired of the fight. And most probably this fight in the actual situation we are will go on for a long time, short of a miracle, which can always happen, but that's up to God. So the fight is on. We will have to battle, and we will continue to battle. We cannot expect things to become better without our action, without doctrine, being firm in doctrine, and that's for every one of us, and without holiness, without working on our holiness. That's why in every time Bishop Foley emphasized on the Rosary Crusade. Pray the Rosary, offer sacrifices. There is no solution to this crisis in the Church without a personal sanctification of every one of us, of the priests, of the faithful, of the families, and so on. That's the real answer to the crisis. It's not in dreaming, it's not even in talking, it's in acting, in doing things, and what we can do is pray and sacrifice. Thank you very much, and now you can he owes me a pizza now. Yes.
Did Species 3 have anything to do with the outcome of society's position regarding the preeminence?
No. No. Because it's, I think it's two different matters. Of course, everything is linked in a way. But in our relation with Rome, we study what is presented to us. Of course, Assisi and what happened in Germany also are not good signs, definitely. And that's where we see this attachment to Vatican II also. I mean, everything else is Vatican II, purified, but Vatican II, which is already a disaster. So
when
I don't.
When you say what happened in Germany,
All the documents, the text, the visits. I mean, it's pure ecumenism everywhere.
Isn't it a little frustration when Bishop Fillet celebrates when the quote the Pope who's drunk with modernism about, you know, you shouldn't drive while drunk?
No, I mean, we are in front of a mystery, and that's something we will not resolve. The mystery of the Church, the mystery of what Archbishop Lefebvre called the Passion of the Church, where all the divinity of the Church kind of disappeared in the same way that the divinity of our Lord disappeared on the cross. It's not visible. Nobody could see it, and most of the nearly everybody lost the faith. And I think, as Archbishop Lefebvre explained, we are in the same situation with the Church. We do not see the divinity of the Church anymore. We see only the human side of it, and it's very discouraging. And but the Church is divine. The Pope is the Pope. The Church is the only ark of salvation, and there is no other way, and the restoration of the Church will come from Rome. It will come. It there is no other way. This will not come from Bishop Follet, from me, except if he's elected the Pope. There are some talks about that. Normally it's on April 1st, but
I find it very hard to tell my relatives who want to convert to Catholicism from Judaism. They don't know where to send them. Because they're on Long Island, and the only place is St. Michael's, but they're not there all the time.
I don't.
No, it's not people who want to become Catholic.
Ah.
Oh, and they go to places like some of the churches say you don't need to become Catholic.
Yeah. I mean, yes, the situation of the Church is a disaster for the souls. How many souls are lost for eternity in hell because of the crisis of the Church? I mean, millions, billions. It's a mystery. But yes, many souls will not be saved because of this crisis, and soul that would have been saved if the situation of the Church was a normal situation of the Church.
Because I find it very frustrating trying to teach them from long distances
about
the crisis that they don't even know.
The only way we have today is to gather into some places as we do here. For instance, a school, a parish, and the people who really want to convert. I think that's the only message we can send to them is move near a priory. If really you want to save your soul, there is no other way. There is no other way. We'll go on mission. We'll send the priest everywhere as they do. But if really you want to save your soul, well, that's not that everybody can do it, but that's definitely the message we send, because as you know by practice, by experience, that's how we can really revive the Christian life in our families, in our parishes and so on.
With the motu proprio and then the supposed excommunications being lifted, but if the society does not accept the final preamble, what is the status of the society then as a religious order?
It's the status of the society today is it's a, I would say, in a canonical aspect of it, it's a bit confusing because the first because the society was founded with a canonical status. They have always contested, refused the refusal or the retraction of the canonical status of the society. So there is their question, okay, no, the society was never properly lost her canonical status. So, but nevertheless, during the 40 years of existence since 76 or whenever, we have opened many houses here, and well, these houses don't have a real canonical status as it should be in the church. Normally, to open a place like here, we would need the permission of the bishop. Instead, if we would have a personal prelature and even with some special privileges, we could do that. But normally in the church we cannot do that. So we have done that in the past 40 years. When I opened a priory in the U.S., I'm sorry, but it's true. I don't go to the bishop and ask permission to do it. I just do it according to our needs because I know the answer. So there is a canonical. So you cannot look at the situation just on the pure canonical angle. You have immediately to see the state of necessity which justifies. So what the Pope says today all the time is, well, the society has no legitimate apostolate. Well, if you look at it as a purely canonical question, you know, that's a fair statement. In a way, but the state of necessity explains all the rest. So that's our situation, which is confusing, I'll say, for people who do not see the state of necessity. Is it confusing for me? No, not at all. And I hope not too much for you. But for outsiders, yes, it can be confusing. But.
Would you like to speculate a little bit on what would be the state of affairs if we were to accept a new, different version of the preamble and the relationships between us and the local bishops and the general Novus Ordo Church and us?
So now I'm changing myself into a prophet. Just kidding. I think if, let's say, a doctrinal preamble is acceptable by the society, we sign it, and Rome gives us a canonical status, whatever, prelature, a personal prelature, or so two conditions there. First, the preamble is acceptable. Second condition, the canonical situation is acceptable in the sense that we have from the bishops the protection that we need so that we can continue our work and even extend what we have started. If these two conditions, which are already a big miracle, would happen, I think the fight between the modernists and the society will become even worse. We'll be put in a situation where at any time we'll be in conflict with what the Novus Ordo Church does and what we do, and it will be, I think, if it would happen, our situation would be even more of a fight than it is today. if you think that because we receive a canonical status, the criticism of the society will be finished, there will be nice people all dancing together, and I am sorry, but I don't see the future like this, and I think I have a problem.
I have a question about actually the opposite. It's the doctrinal preamble is not accepted. There's been some speculation that Rome would, or the Pope even, would exercise more formal excommunication. I mean, the previous excommunication was by the law. If he were to use the power of the keys and actually formally excommunicate, that would, I mean, I just wonder about what the response would be.
I think first, an excommunication is valid by the ground of it, not by the action. You have the excommunication of Joan of Arc, burned, excommunicated by the local bishops who had the power to excommunicate her, but didn't have the ground to excommunicate it. It was invalid from the start. So an excommunication is not just a jurisdiction power exercised on someone. So if there is no ground for the excommunication, there is no validity to the excommunication. And if we are excommunicated again on no ground, there will be no validity to that excommunication. Secondly, is that a possibility? Yes, it's always a possibility. If I change myself in a prophet, I would say I don't think it will happen, because I think it will be even worse for Rome to try to resolve the situation, which is definitely the intention of the Pope. He wants to resolve the situation. I think the problem is that he doesn't understand what the problem is, but he wants to resolve it. Is that possible? Yes, it is. What has led us during this crisis all the time is to follow providence. If we refuse this preamble, it's because it's not acceptable. It's because the principles of Vatican II are still there, and then it will just destroy the whole thing. It will not work. It cannot work on fake and false principles. So we trust that if we have to refuse this preamble, the providence will lead us to the next step. There also, I think, with the action of the Pope, I think the firmness of the society, of the Archbishop, and of the society has only brought more success and restoration in the church. Those who have not been firm on, especially on doctrine, have been kind of or swallowed, or they cannot really restore things. And they even count on us. You don't know how many of the Ecclesia Dei people have told us, do not sign with Rome. You are there. Do not sign with Rome. Okay? Well, yeah. To me, it's an absurd statement. I said, well, if we should not sign, well, just come in. Hey, we need some help. put ourselves into providence. Because otherwise it's impossible. Yes.
First of all, I'd say thank you for keeping us informed and taking the time to be with us. I appreciate that. We always like to know what's going on. Convey our gratitude to those who are directly involved with the fight. And we appreciate their efforts and we're praying for them. And we wish them the best and we wish we could be part of that fight. And of course we can with our prayers and we're doing that. My question is, do you think it'll take another ecumenical council to push away the Second Vatican Council?
I don't think so. I think you need the power of the Pope. But there also I'm a prophet. I don't think so, because Vatican II is the first council that has gathered so many bishops in a time where the communication and media take so much importance already in the 60s that it becomes, in a way, very difficult to control. My personal opinion on that is that what is needed and what will result is a pope that really takes the measures and restore things. And it's most probably, I would say, it's something that will happen by steps. It's not like tomorrow we'll have a pope that will say Vatican II is no good, finished, just that. No, I think it's by step, and we see already some steps. I believe our mission on that regard is to help the Roman authorities to see clearly what the problem is. They don't. They see the effect of the crisis. They are more aware than we are of the state of necessity. They are. And so they see the effect of the crisis, but I think they don't understand the why it is going that way. And I think our mission is to, by our firmness on doctrine, tell them that's there. And I think the 2 years of discussions were very good on that regard. It was a good explanation. We were able to really explain our position, receive their objections, answer their objections. We do not agree, they do not agree with, but it's there already. When you see the new documents coming, they adjust their answers to what we have discussed with them. So it's a step. Yes.
Father, do you think that complete documents of the secret of Fatima will have anything to do with the Society of St. Pius attempt at revealing what actually happened as far as what 1960 that should have been revealed?
Here you really ask me to be a prophet. I don't know. I mean, definitely we think that the message and the full message, the third secret, is related to the crisis of the church. A crisis of faith, crisis of doctrine. Is that related to the society directly? I don't know. And I think it's more, because it's a short document, I think it's more directed towards the Pope himself and what will happen to the Pope and to the Church in general. But is it related to what we, the situation we are in? Oh yes, definitely. It's we are in the times that have been announced by Our Lady of Fatima, and the consecration of Russia to the Immaculate Heart will be the start of the solution. And it's how the Immaculate Heart will start reigning over the world again and restore things. Yes.
So if that was our requirement, they would kind of study Russia?
No, because it's really it's a good question. I must say, not the others were not good questions. it's a good question because could it be a condition to deal with Rome? I think we would put ourselves into a position that we don't have by providence. We didn't receive the mission from God to push the secret of Fatima or not. And you see the Archbishop, even though he went to Fatima to do what he could, consecrate the world, the Russia to the Immaculate Heart, but never interfere with that thing because he never saw that as his mission. He is a bishop, and what he wants is to keep tradition, to restore tradition, and continue the priesthood and so on. And I think that's the mission of the society, and that's what we work about with Rome. Sorry? The mission of Fatima, yes, but it's Sister Lucy to the Bishop of Fatima and to the Pope. It's not to Archbishop Lefebvre, Bishop Foley, or it's we would start mixing things. Not that, once again, Fatima is a very important thing, but it's a decision of the Pope. I think what we can do and what we do is these rosary crusades, prayers, sacrifice to support that. But I don't think it is our authority or our role to go into that. And it's very important to keep our position according to our stake in life, to our mission. When we start taking missions that we don't really have, usually it's dangerous. At least. No, it's just, I think we must absolutely keep an apostolic spirit with a desire to convert as many souls as possible around us, and therefore enlarge the people that come to us and advertise tradition. Not that we are going to put big boards, even why not, but we have to keep that apostolic spirit. It would be non-Catholic to cut that. So tendency in the situation we are is to enclose, because we are in a time of crisis, because there is so much danger outside that it's a natural reaction. It will happen, but we have to be careful. We have to open. Who are the best people we can approach? Difficult to know. We see that people of goodwill from anywhere, Novus Ordo Catholics, Protestant, Jews, Muslim, have been converted by the society to the Catholic faith. People of goodwill, all from nowhere. So I think our strength is the tradition of the Church. And we must have a strong faith in the power of tradition to convert people, to bring people in, and not be stopped by what is not essential. Not be stopped by the fact that they don't live exactly the same way we do. Yeah, well, they might. We must convert them. They don't dress the same way we do. Well, they will, but we must first convert them, and so on. And the power of tradition is a power of God. So we can really convert a lot of people. We need to have that spiritual, that apostolic spirit. And for that, we need the help of the faithful. It's the Legion of Mary. It's the apostolate you do in the schools. It's and anything we can extend there, the lay people can really help the priest to reach others that we cannot reach by us, because we are supermen, but just
Father, are all four bishops of the society in agreement with how the negotiations are proceeding?
Yes, I think so. On the on the principles, anyway, I would think so. We must. There will be some different positions at a certain point, but until now, anyway, and they have always been in agreement, and I think they are today on the way to proceed. On that, we must also remember that even though there are four bishops consecrated by Bishop Archbishop Lefebvre, there is one in charge. And that's important to remember, especially in times of decisions or time of crisis. I cannot make the decision. I might have my opinion on the matter, but I'm not going to make the decision. Only Bishop Lefebvre can make the decisions at the moment, and so on. And in the same way that only the Archbishop could make the decisions when signing the protocol in 1988 or resigning it, consecrating bishops and all that, I think that's important to keep that structure in mind. But I still believe that there is a great unity in the society on the principles, definitely. On the practical approach, well, you will always find some differences, but what keeps us united are the principles.
As we are all getting older, so are our children.
Yeah, I know.
What's going to happen down the road, so to speak, when they reach their end of the line? Where is the society then?
Bishop Foley, in other words, you are asking, are we going to consecrate new bishops?
You're a prophet.
I read minds. Bishop Foley was asked the same questions, and his answer was, if we are in the same condition that we were in 1988, we will consecrate more bishops. In other words, if there is again a real state of necessity for bishops, we will consecrate bishops. But we will do it as the Archbishop Lefebvre did it, only when we are really in the state of necessity. Remember that he waited. He died less than 3 years after he consecrated his bishops, so he kind of waited the signs to see that that's a state of necessity. We hope that we will not have a state of necessity as such, but if we have to, well, I think it would not change the situation as we are now. Except that that would be an easy new excommunication for sure.
Well, the four of them never got on the same plane together.
They are usually careful to not to be very often in the same place and not traveling in the same plane. But they also, we trust Providence. If the four bishops would die tomorrow for any reason, we are in the hands of God. God has a plan. I hope that's not the way he wants to do it. But without trusting God and putting ourselves really in Providence, we cannot do anything. We would be worried from morning to evening, and then not doing anything. No, we go. We have a work to do, and we continue to do it with that confidence in God.
You've been here for weeks. Could you tell us a little bit about your mission here this week and your impressions?
Turn the table.
can you ask me the question before I was sharing something? Father, we have
phone
calls. No, I think we visited the school with Father Beck and myself. Father Beck went more with the classes, teachers, and he more was visiting with the priest and how things are. I'm pleased with the visit. I think the school is doing very well. The number of students is impressive. It's fighting the position between the second and third position of the most the biggest school in the U.S. And I think it's improving step by step. So I'm very glad that everyone works so hard in this school, and I'm grateful to the priests, Father Stanish, and all the team for what they are doing. So, I won't have to come back before a couple of years. Look how happy he is. Don't try to keep me until 11 because I'm not paying pizza.
Does Bishop Fillet speak to the Pope's committee? Does he actually speak to the Holy Father? Have he ever?
He met him once. I don't know exactly the year, 2005 or 6. soon after the election of the Pope. A year after, I think. But only once. So everything goes through the commission, in fact the Ecclesia Dei commission. But the Pope is overseeing these talks and discussions directly. He's informed directly. So he's following things very closely. Someone asked me some time ago, why would the Pope not communicate directly with Bishop Fillet? I think it's a normal way of doing for the Church, of working for the Church. The Pope do not deal with everything directly himself, and the commissions are there to do the work, and he just give his approval or not. So it's a normal way to go. And I believe that in the actual situation, to have to deal with the Pope directly would not make things simpler, or could happen. I mean, it's easier to discuss and be really open on the doctrinal things with the commission than with the boss himself. Oh yes. When you have a problem with your boss, not always easy to tell him that, you know, what everything you do is wrong.
Is there a trust there that you can trust the commission is telling the Pope what he is saying?
Oh yes. Yes, the commission is the four priests or Monsignor that are in the commission are very close to the Pope and reporting everything to the Pope, no doubt.
And then is there any kind of issue you can compare this to? Like someone like Bishop approaching Rome with this crisis?
Definitely not a crisis of this size. We are in an upside down situation. We go to the Congregation of Defense of the Faith, and we explain the doctrine of the faith. And on the other side, we try to defend Vatican II. We are supposed to go there and be told what the faith is. That's a normal situation. And we are supposed to be. And it seems that they don't even always agree between themselves. they are impressed by the strength of the society's position, I believe, by the unity of the priests of the society, and by the strength of the doctrine. But then say when the answer is like, yeah, no, maybe yes. That's what I was saying.
It's a wonderful time to be Catholic.
Yes, it is. I think it's a wonderful time to be where we are at, ourselves, with the graces we have received. And it's a time really to be generous, to give our life to God and to work on our sanctification, because first we have received graces that not many people have received in our times. Secondly, because we have a role to play. We can do a lot. When you see the work of the society of the 40 years and where we are at today, it's already a lot. And if we would be more generous, especially in our sanctification, we would do twice, three times, 100 times more. So, yes, it's a beautiful time to live in if we take the graces we have received seriously and try really to sanctify our life. And I mean, when I see the education that our youth receive in our school, the teaching, the discipline, the help, the faith in our times, this is a miracle. And it's something that even ourselves even receive. So you have a role to play, young fellows there. You will have to bring the world to conversion. And nobody else can do it. If you don't do it, nobody will do it. So it's a... life is a serious thing. We must take seriously what we are given. It's a joyful thing, but it's serious. Yep.
How about in Temple Israel, with Bishop the Castle Fire and under your pen? Do we know what's going on in that life?
Well, it's not very good. I mean, I don't know exactly, not followed. I don't think the situation is very good in Campos, once again, because I don't think the principles were kept strongly. And the agreement they made was not really based on principles and on the refusal of the new teaching and so on. So, but I will not be able to give a real update. Thank you very much. I'll give you a break.